Hello, everyone, and welcome to our office hours for the Institute of Nutritional Endocrinology. This is our office hours for the month of March 2017, and we're here to answer your questions, get you some coaching. Stan had uploaded a lab, so I'm going to review that lab. I don't guarantee that I can get through that entire lab because it's an extremely long one. Those are the kind of things we usually do on our NEPT lab assessment calls where we schedule to just do two things. So I want to make sure I'm happy to do it if there's time. I just don't want to do that at the expense of other people not being able to get questions answered. So I'll get through as much of this as possible. I do want to just say that if you have a lab you want me to look at, you know, usually it's a client lab, but you can be your own client, so I have no problem with that. The best thing to do is to upload individual, if you've got separate labs, upload them to individual files, because what I'm looking at is Stan gave me a whole bunch of them, and they're long labs, so there's a tox screen, and there's an oat, and who knows what else is in here, because then I have to just scroll through the pages, page by page by page, so it's 37 pages. So what's going to happen is I'm going to want to be cross-referencing one to the next, like say if he has certain marker on one test and I want to go look to see what it is on the other, I can't have that happening in two screens at a time. I don't know if I'm allowed to open that file twice. I could certainly try to open it in a separate window. Let me see if I click it a second time if it does that, and then I can position it to different places. But the way that these calls work is you can type your question into the chat or the Q&A box, or you can raise your hand, and that's a *2 on your telephone keypad. Welcome for those people who are new. If you're new, you probably just started with IRSPT, the Insulin Resistance Program, and I'm excited to have you here. These calls are for everybody in the Institute, so you'll get questions that are all over the map, which is actually to your advantage because you might have joined for a particular program, but you're going to get insights and wisdom and learning from our variety of different programs. And we do that. And once these calls get a little bit overwhelming, the show-up rate is really manageable at this point, but if they start to get too much, we're going to have to add a second call, you know, that kind of thing. So let's just see. So if I'm going to show Stan's lab, I'm assuming, Stan, that that's okay with you, and I'm not sure if Stan is hearing me yet, but I'm assuming that it's okay with you to show it because you uploaded it. Now, typically the way we like labs to be uploaded is using an uploader. All the programs have a link on the resources tab that says uploader. And that what that is it has or case study submission or something like that. And basically it has a little thing that gets me off the hook for showing your private information in front of lots of people. It says that you give me permission to review it for educational purposes. If you do submit something that's from one of your clients or patients, you have to make sure that you take their name off the pages or get their explicit permission to show it. You know, you say to them, hey, I'm going to be in this training and I'm going to submit you as a case. Is that okay? Do you want to do it anonymously or do you want to do it just, you know, in general where everybody sees your name and you get their permission? So the best thing to do is to do that. But we're going to be writing up some more specific guidelines for submitting cases, because the easier it is for me to go through a case, the more cases we can do and the better off it is for you. And if I'm jumping around all over the place, especially if you're submitting labs, like blood chemistry, if you're in INE, you have access to our blood chemistry software and you also have access to our blood chemistry Excel spreadsheet. And that makes it so much easier, and it's such a great learning tool, and it makes it go quickly so I can review quite a number of those on a single call. So I'm going to go back to, I've got many screens open, so forgive me if I take a little while to find my way back to where I was. There we are. I'm on a small screen because I'm on my laptop versus my desktop. So the way that you get attention is raise your hand, *2, and that will allow you to ask a question or open up your line. I see Stan submitted his, and he's now on the phone. So I'm going to start by opening up Stan's line. I'm going to check the boxes to make sure everybody's okay. Uh, Okay, so good. I'm going to look at the chat, make sure everybody's hearing okay, and then we'll get going. Let's see. Fine to show. Okay, good. I got your permission. Okay, so let me open up your line, Stan. There we are. Howdy doody.
Hello.
How are you?
I'm pretty good. Been sitting here waiting to get going.
Waiting to get going. Good. Well, I'm glad you got on the phone because it sounded like you were having some issues with your speaker or whatever.
No, I got through on a web call. It just was no sound for a little bit. I don't know why.
Huh. Oh, but it did finally. Okay, good. You are. And I'm glad I'm on it because there's stuff. For some reason, it stopped working for me, the web calls, several weeks ago, and I wasn't able to actually use it. I've been using a phone and now I'm traveling. So I figured, I don't know how to set it up, Lynn. If there's a way to set it up so people don't show, so there's no videos showing because it disrupts the showing of the screen. If you can find that setting, go ahead and set it for me. I know I found it once where it says nobody's allowed to put on their video. That way we could just share a screen. So I'm going to share screen right now, Stan, with your, there we are. Share screen. And here we go. I'm going to see if I can close this little sidebar thingy and make it bigger so everybody could see it better. Are you seeing my screen? Have you clicked to the Zoom or do you have your labs in front of you?
I have the labs in front of me. I do not see anywhere where I can click in to Zoom at all.
Unless really? The email would have had that.
So you want me to do the one with the,
No, you don't have to. You don't have to if you've got it in front of you. But if you do, if you're seeing my screen, you'll know exactly where I'm at and what I'm commenting on. So for everybody else, in the email that we sent you, it said, if there's a screen share, click this link, and that gets you into Zoom. And if people are listening on Zoom, that's fine. Usually I try to keep it to one platform. We haven't switched over completely to Zoom instead of Instant Teleseminar, but that's going to be something we're going to do in the future. But this gives us the ability to share the screen. So, Lynn, just let me know that you're seeing the screen. It looks like you are. It says it. And let me make sure that this is being recorded in terms of the screen share. Yep, it is. All right. Okay. So this is a test you did, and I know that you were on a previous call and you were saying that you were having some symptoms, some neurologic symptoms that were concerning you, and you were going in to get a full workup. And so I'm assuming that this is as a result of that full workup.
I did everything except for 23andMe genetics, which my naturopath told me he wants to see those before anything more than vitamin E and panthocyanin.
Okay, so he doesn't want to actually address these situations until he sees what your genetic tendencies are, which kind of makes some sense.
That was what he told me.
Yeah. Okay, so you're in the process of doing that one?
I sent it in. I just have waiting for the results.
Perfect. It takes about four weeks to get the results, so you have to sit patiently. All right, so, whoops. All right, there it goes. So this is a scanned copy, so it doesn't quite line up. Sorry. It just like went, there it is. Good. All right. So this is a glyphosate profile. And it looks like, and I haven't worked with these, it's a 1.2 was your findings. So you're in about the 50th percentile, it looks like, as far as glyphosate exposure. And this is a blood test. Is that correct?
Or is this that one is the organic acid, the first one.
Oh, did they add glyphosate to that test? That's new.
Great Plains does it, yeah.
Okay, all right. Maybe it's an add-on because I've never seen it with it before. Okay, so there is some glyphosate buildup there. Sorry for the delay, but it takes a while to do the screen. All right, so this is the first page. I'm on the first page of the organic acid. So that first page had the glyphosate. The second page, or page three, I guess, maybe page two. Okay, there we go. So the first page of organic acids through Great Plains is usually related to intestinal microbial overgrowth. And it looks like you've got a, you've got some bacterial markers. You've got a fungal marker, a couple of fungal markers, bacterial marker, and a couple of Clostridia markers. Is that right? Am I reading this correctly? Yeah, you're 15 and it should be less than 8. Wait. Why are they showing you off the chart, off the scale? You're 91. I guess it's outside of the optimal range, but not necessarily outside of the crazy range. So just 0.3. Give me a second. Sorry about this. My screen keeps, because I'm scanning, I'm moving it down and it's a JPEG versus a PDF, it's not real fast at moving. Like I'm echoing. Okay, so you've got high citra. Okay. Is somebody else open or is that you echoing? Because I'm hearing every word I say echoing that.
Do you mean me, Rita?
Yeah, are you?
I'm on Zoom now.
On both then. Are you on both?
Oh, you know what? I might be. Let me go turn it off.
Give me a second. Let me mute you. Mute you on Zoom.
Okay.
That's what I'll do. And I'm going to, I did say mute all. But yes, mute all. All new and. Okay. Is that better? No, it's still there. Okay. Try muting yourself on and tell us. Can you mute your speaker? Without muting your mic? Okay, so that's much better.
No, that's not it.
Still echoing. Let me see if somebody else's line is open. Right. I'm going to close you on Instant Tele Seminar and open you on Zoom. All right, because that might be it. Let me open you on Zoom. I don't like having to use both. We're going to have to stop using both and just make, I prefer both. Ah, there we go. I got you. Unmute. All right. Go ahead and speak now. Stan, oh, much better. Much better. Yay. I like Zoom much better. All right. All right. So you've got a couple of markers. You've got a citromalate and arabinose, which are high. For fungal, yeast and fungal markers, you've got others that are borderline high, like right over the edge. So there's some gut stuff going on that needs to be addressed. The yeasts and there's bacterial markers, the hydroxybenzoic, but also on the high end there is the hydroxyphenylacetic. So those are definitely issues and the DHPPA, plus some of the Clostridia markers. They're not actually in what they call the high range, but they're out of the optimal range. You see them sitting outside of the little boxes in the middle. So you've got a lot of things going on. Clostridia markers can actually affect your neurotransmitters. And we'll see that when we look at your neurotransmitters, what's going on there. So that's number one, first and foremost, is you've got to address this gut stuff. Okay. Have you done anything to address your gut? Have you been doing, I mean, you're in CMDS, but have you done any of that stuff on yourself?
Yes, I eat sauerkraut, I have a little kombucha, and I take probiotic supplements. So when I saw this, I was a little surprised.
Yeah, so you probably have to do something more, you know, I always like to crowd the bad guys out, which is what you're doing with taking your probiotics and stuff, but sometimes you actually have to go in with ammunition and wipe them out. And that's probably the case here. So it looks like there's some, some of those stool tests would tell you exactly like what sensitivities, what herbs or whatever, but you can do some general work with these things. And we could talk about that in a second. Let me just see what the rest of it is because I don't like to create a plan in isolation just based on one page. Your oxalic acid is a little on the high side, not terrible, but your glyceric is very high. So you might have some sensitivities to oxalates. Do you notice, do you have joint pains? Do you get any, like, bladder type pains, things like that, kidney? Okay. So it might be irritating your bladder, but oxalate sensitivity is something you got to watch for here. And here's the thing, you know, if you're eating a really good high green food diet, you're going to get a lot of oxalates in your diet. And for some people, it doesn't matter. But if you have, and the body can just eliminate them. But in this case, it's showing up in your urine, which means that it's making its way through the digestive tract into the bloodstream and then being filtered out by the kidneys and showing up in the urine. So that means that there's a leaky gut, basically. And given the bacteria, the yeast, and the clostridia that we're seeing on those intestinal markers, that's probably why. So you've got a leaky gut, and these oxalates are getting in the system. And they may or may not be causing you symptoms, but it's something that needs to be looked at least looking at lowering your oxalate. You're not off the charts like a lot of folks are, but lowering your oxalate intake for a while you're healing your leaky gut. But if you just lower your oxalate intake, like a lot of these low oxalate diet people are saying, just lower your oxalates, get rid of the oxalates, you're not really addressing the root cause. Right. The really reason that the oxalates are getting into the bloodstream so they could circulate around and cause problems systemically is that there's a leaky gut. So we're coming back to gut. Everything's coming back to gut at this point. But you'll help to heal your gut faster if you can decrease the oxalates in your diet. So I would just go to one of the low oxalate sites, download one of the charts that they have. They're all kind, they're all over the map, like anything else. There's some that agree with each other, and there's some that don't. But in general, like the high oxalate things like spinach and Swiss chard are real common. And a lot of people get into making lots of salads and smoothies, and they just use spinach and Swiss chard. And that can be creating a problem too. So I would be varying your greens and getting arugula in there, which doesn't have any oxalates at all, and looking at the low oxalate foods and just going on a couple of weeks. So remind me what the actual presenting symptoms were. I know there was some neurologic stuff, but just remind me so I have that fresh in my mind.
Okay, I'll take a step back, Western medicine first.
Yeah.
100% combat related PTSD, so I'm a little bit of a nervous Nelly.
Yeah.
Diclofenia, which is mine is low end, low spectrum. So I take Depakote 1,000 milligrams.
So tell me, cyclospenia?
Cyclothemia, which is a form of bipolar.
Basically. Bipolar, okay, got it.
But lower spectrum. ADHD, again, lower spectrum, no medication for that.
Okay.
And then I have a just general anxiety and depression, but though not really lately. So much those, and I take something called prazosin, and which is supposed to be like mellows you at night, and also for some reason supposed to suppress PTSD dreams. That's my biggest issue with that.
Okay.
So those are my Western, and then my current ones are adrenal fatigue, lack of good sleep from high cortisol at night.
Mm-hmm.
I go to the bathroom a lot. I have borderline high blood pressure.
Okay.
I gained some weight recently, which is not like me because I'm a bodybuilder.
Mm.
Pounds on, in the midsection primarily.
Okay, so that's a cortisol blood sugar issue, yeah.
Brain fog, majorly. I have a master's degree from Rutgers. I used to go to school to say if I had to go back, I don't think I could pass anything.
Mm. Okay. And this all started, all of these symptoms, these quote-unquote diseases, diagnoses, whatever you want to call them from a Western perspective, but this presentation started after you were in combat. Is that correct? Like all of it seems to be
Everything started after. It started as I got older and it got worse as I got older. And the doctor,
sure.
Basically, the doctor told me,
live with it.
Further down, he said this didn't happen overnight.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm sure it didn't. So, and how long ago were you in combat? How long ago is this PTSD started?
23
years.
Gulf War. Oh. 5 in Iraq.
Oh, wow.
So I'm 49. So 2002, 3, and 1990, 91.
Okay. Okay, so long time, and you just never were the same after coming back. Was it worse after the first after the second time, or was it pretty much the same? I mean, you would think.
I think it started with my divorce in my early 30s a little bit. It's PTSD is not just 100%, you know, a combat. I think it's a combination of things, childhood too. I was bullied, blah blah blah.
Right.
I won't bore you with all the details of childhood and my counseling, but. The bottom line is it got worse as I got older.
Yeah. So it's it's accumulation of stresses on your nervous system that caused you to just go over the edge and not being able to keep the chemistry balanced anymore.
Correct.
Correct. And diet-wise, tell me a little bit about your diet and how long have you been on a better diet, and were you, I'm assuming you were on the standard American diet for a long time like all the rest of us.
Joined IIN in, 2013. IIN, Institute of Integrated Nutrition.
Right.
Started changing my eating in 2013. I would like to say I'm an 80-20 eater, meaning 80% is clean, but it's really more like two-thirds clean, one-third I doubt.
Okay.
But, to be honest with you.
Yeah.
I'm about 95.5 right now, shooting for 100 pretty soon.
Yeah, okay, that's what I was going to ask you, is how much is this really impacting your life that you're willing to say screw the convenience, screw the social, screw the whatever about the taste of the food, I'm just ready to do it.
Yeah, even something as simple as a veggie burger at the local restaurant after my book club might not be really good.
No, it's probably not good because most of the time they'll have wheat or gluten in them. They have soy. They have probably more glyphosate because it's probably not organic, you know, all that kind of stuff. And you've got these indicators. So at this point, and this is something when you're coaching clients, right? I've been doing this for 25 years, coaching people with this stuff. And I made that decision for myself 32 years ago at this point, that it wasn't worth it. Right. And he just didn't want to live like that anymore. And I had that brain fog. I know what that feels like. And it's awful. I was valedictorian and suddenly I couldn't remember somebody's name. You know, I was only 25. And so it's really, and when we're coaching people, it's really helping them to see that, okay, now's the time because this can be turned around. And here's the thing. And I love that you prefaced it with Western, boom, boom, boom. And then you went into what's really going on is because, but a lot of times we buy into the crap. We buy into the box they put us in, and we don't really see a way out of the box because they painted it as such that there is no way out. So PTSD, it's just a diagnosis. It's a box they put you in. And I would like to see you start relating to yourself and to that box totally differently. And don't, like, because I have PTSD, this happens, that happens, the other thing happens. Because my body's out of balance from these horrendous circumstances I was in and this horrible diet that I had, which wasn't meeting my needs and had a lot of stressful pieces in it, I've got these imbalances that I'm working on fixing. And it may sound, you know, kind of corny or whatever to really think that the language makes that much of a difference, but it does. Because when you take on a diagnosis that somebody else gave you, you live up to it. They see that all the time in schools. You take a group of kids and they've experimented with it where they told the teachers, oh, this group of kids they're really brilliant and they're like your top students. And this group over here, they're the kind of ADD, no good ones. But really it was a randomly done thing. And the kids that were, they told that these are your brilliant kids, they lived up to potential and they were amazing. So, I want you to not limit yourself. And you know this, and I know you have the food mood coach and all that, but a lot of times we know it to teach someone else, but we haven't internalized it fully. Okay?
I agree.
Okay. So that's where to start. And now let's look at these chemical things. So oxalates, not something you might have even looked at. Hey, I'm eating better. I'm eating more salads. I'm eating more spinach. I'm eating more kale. I'm eating more chia seeds. Oxalates. So not that they're bad foods for you forever, but you may want to look at just, you know, curtailing that and see if you even notice a difference. Make sense? Okay. So glycolytic pathways. So lactic. So your Krebs cycle, why do you have fatigue and brain fog? Well, your Krebs cycle isn't working well at all. Oh, my God. Your Krebs cycle is totally screwed. Now, the thing to look at is how much of this is genetic tendency and how much extra work do you have to do to help it fix? So, for example, like you said on the gut stuff, you said, well, I'm taking the probiotics, I'm doing all this stuff, I'm surprised. But again, if you've got some genetic indicators towards more prevalence or a tendency towards overgrowth, then you're going to have to do a lot more than the average person, right? There's the George Burns, smoke, drink, do all kinds of crap, lives to 100. You know, there's my mom who did the same thing, probably less than George Burns did, and died at 55. Right? So the genetics play in it, but the genetics just tell us how much more strict we have to be about restoring and maintaining balance. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
And there's a whole bunch of markers in the genetics that bear upon the Krebs cycle. So yeah, your glycolysis, and then you have the Krebs cycle. So you've got both of them are screwed. All of the steps. Every single step is aconitic. That's the one that's the only one that's in the right range. Everything else is out of range. So it basically means that you don't have the right nutrients to get your glucose comes in and it can't make it through the Krebs cycle. It can't make it through because it's stopping at all these places. So the recommendation is take a look at that Krebs cycle. B vitamins are critical, riboflavin and niacin in particular. And then amino acids are critical, which means making sure you have good stomach acid, that you're actually digesting your proteins and getting them into the system. And sometimes taking, you know, some free-form amino acids, which can be developed from a test like this, like which ones would be the best formulation for you. But I would say B vitamins are critical here, like good high doses of B vitamins, maybe with extra riboflavin. FAD is a super important cofactor there, and that would be in the form of riboflavin 5-phosphate, not your cheapo, you know, whatever that's GNC type brand, but a really high quality, a thorn or a pure encapsulations or something where they have all the activated forms. Right. And then also I would look at liquid forms too, because if you do have an issue with your gut, which we've seen that you do, you may not be breaking down the capsules well enough to get them in. Okay. And this plays into making sure you're eating the whole foods, right? No refined foods at all, because they're going to suck the metabolites out of your Krebs cycle. When you take in white flour, which is completely devoid of all most of the B vitamins, completely gone, you need those B vitamins to take it through this Krebs cycle, and they're missing. So every time you eat something that is a refined food, it's robbing Krebs cycle intermediates and leaving you brain fogged. The other thing that happens in the Krebs cycle is this amazing process, but it's creates a lot of oxidative byproducts, and those cause brain fog. And if you can't clear those because you've got dysfunctional detox pathways, you'd have a problem. So your whole Krebs cycle is messed up. So amino acids and it might be even be a good protein powder that you're having a couple, three times a day, just to make sure that you're getting your amino acids in there. And B vitamins, going to be very helpful. Enzymes to break them down, make sure all your food's being broken down with the enzymes. And then your neurotransmitters, again, not surprising from what you just told me, that you've got imbalances here. So dopamine, norepinephrine, epinephrine. Yeah, all of this stuff, you're not actually taking yourself through. There's a really cool chart switch we can show at the end of this, but you don't have enough of the metabolites, and oftentimes the metabolites, but this, like epinephrine, norepinephrine, that's because your adrenals have been wonked, right? And you're constantly making norepinephrine, epinephrine, which is adrenaline. So you're constantly dipping into that pool, and now you don't have enough to make it happen. Tryptophan, not as bad. So mostly it's the tyrosine norepinephrine pathway, but the tryptophan's not so hot either. but it's okay. It's not bad. That's the one I would focus on, the tyrosine. And you mentioned, didn't you mention a tremor when we talked before?
Yes, the tremors seem to have gone away with the lower doses of
Okay. And I don't know the mechanism. I have to look it up to see if that's interfering with your dopamine. But when I think, see, tremors, I'm thinking dopamine because Parkinson's, you have tremors and it's a dopamine deficiency. So dopamine and it plays out here. So tyrosine is precursors to dopamine. And if you're,
I was just going to mention, I went to the neurologist. They said you don't have Parkinson's based on a test they gave me.
Good.
Probably the Depakote.
Good.
The VA lowered my Depakote.
Okay.
I still have a shade of a tremor every now and then, but nothing like it was before.
Okay. So it might be related to a dopamine deficiency. You clearly have dopamine issues here. So let's move on and then we'll come back. I just want to get a full picture. So these are your folate metabolism's fine, your ketones. I went too fast. Give me a second. Okay, there we go. Ketones. Tell me more about your diet. Do you have a high-fat, low-carb diet? Do you have a medium-carb diet? Where are you at with that?
I'm switching on Friday. Right now, I am high-fat, low-carbs, about 25%, maybe 30% calories from protein. And I'm switching to lower my carbs down. I think maybe taking 100 grams right now, carbs down, I'm lowering it.
Little by little. Do you measure your blood sugar? Do you measure your blood sugar?
Yes, I have.
Okay, and where does it range?
Sugar was 48 non-fasting, and fasting was, it's in here.
148?
No, 48 fasting.
Oh, fasting. Oh, wow. Okay, so you're definitely in a so that explains this ketone stuff here, because you are in a ketogenic, you know, at least a partial ketogenic state, even if it's in that range that you're at. All right, so yeah, especially with if your blood sugar is 48 and you don't feel like you're going to keel over and die, your body's switched to fat burning, or at least partially switched to fat burning. So what was your postprandial, your after eating?
Borderline elevated 3 to 11, so not really bad. Non-fasting was 48, which on the adrenal test elevated.
Oh, that's insulin. You're talking insulin.
Oh, insulin. I'm sorry.
Okay, so a completely different picture that I'm getting. So insulin that high is clearly, yes, you're on the right track to lower your carbs. I would get a blood sugar meter and start testing. Great. And just don't let your blood sugar go. Don't eat anything that's going to raise your blood sugar above like 100, 110.
Okay.
And that if you're going really super low carb. Yeah. Yeah. And that would be like within 45 minutes after eating. Okay. That's a different picture because I'm like 48. You're in ketosis. If you're okay on a 48, no, that's bad. So 3 was good. So it's not like you're overproducing insulin in general. Right? A lot of people have a fasting insulin of 10 or 15 or 20. That's a problem. But boy, your insulin's shooting up the wazoo, and that would explain your extra weight for sure.
Okay.
All right. And that will also explain not being able to get sugar into your cells as well. So your Krebs cycle doesn't work very well, and you're probably not efficiently getting sugar into there because of some insulin resistance. Right, because you're not going to get, you're hyperinsulinemic, but you usually don't get hyperinsulinemic. I mean, unless you're eating the standard American diet, which you're not. You know, you don't produce a lot of insulin in response to the kind of diet you're telling me you're eating, unless your cells are insulin resistant. You just can't get it in there, and the pancreas just keeps secreting and secreting and secreting. Makes sense. And then you might be hungry or more hungry because the insulin will displace or cause the leptin to not be able to bind. So it causes leptin resistance, which doesn't turn off your appetite. So you get into this vicious cycle kind of thing. And if you're having trouble sleeping because your cortisol levels are high, then your leptin cycles are off too.
They are off the charts high at night. 4 p.m. and the 10 p.m. saliva were extremely high. And the doctor said that I probably don't even go into a real REM sleep.
Yeah. So have you started to take anything to help lower those? Phosphatidylserine, Magnolia?
Nope.
So that's the things I would be looking at doing. So you look at where you're high on this, on the adrenal, and about an hour to 2 hours, probably 2 hours before that, you take your phosphatidylserine because it takes a couple hours to kick in. So I would take it, if it's shooting up at four, say, at 2 o'clock, you take some phosphatidylserine. You take some more phosphatidylserine after dinner. You take some more phosphatidylserine at bedtime. And then if you wake up in the middle of the night, you take it again. Okay, and that's going to just get your body to stop making so much cortisol. And memory, it affects the hippocampus, which all that cortisol is affecting your memory. No wonder you're feeling like, you know, you couldn't go back to school because all that cortisol damages your hippocampus. Okay, and I'm guessing we're going to see some a particular SNP in your things, PEMT, which has to do with that as well, phospholipid metabolism. Okay, so looking at your your B12 is okay, methylmalonic acid, B6, B5. I'd still look at B5 as being a possibility to help. Well, no, not with your levels. Never mind. Riboflavin. What did I just say? Okay, riboflavin shows right up. Okay, so yeah, you need the riboflavin. Your vitamin C is zero. Okay. Yeah, you need some vitamin C. Super important. Like your adrenals are sucking your vitamin D dry. It's just sucking it dry. Right. And you need it for the rest of you. You need it for healing. You need it for hormones. You need it for so many things, immune system. Your CoQ10. Yep. Yep. And that's part of the Krebs cycle too. So you'd benefit from CoQ10 as well.
I chew on one every morning. I'm going to up it to two.
Yep. Yep. NAC zero, that's a glutathione. So you're using all this, you're creating all this cortisol, you're creating all this stress, and you are not able to detoxify. Now that's something where I wouldn't supplement until seeing your genes, because you could cause some backups if your genetic pathways, your sulfation pathways are backed up. But you might benefit from NAC, could help the gut. It can help you overall with detox. But I wouldn't, that's one that I wouldn't. Some of these I'm fine with giving you whether I look at your genes or not. But any of the sulfur stuff I wouldn't till I saw that. But for sure, CoQ10, up your CoQ10, add the vitamin C, add the riboflavin, probably niacin as well, because it's needed in those pathways. But you can pull out a Krebs cycle and look at the particular ones that you're stuck at and see what the precursors are. Most of them have riboflavin and niacin. Okay, so detox, yeah, so you're not detoxing either. See your glutathione. My guess is that you've got some SNPs in that glutathione area, that whole sulfur thing. You're not making enough glutathione. And again, that's not something I would supplement. I would, not that I wouldn't give a person with SNPs in that area glutathione because they do need it, but it would be how you proceed with it, how quickly you ramp it up, and how attentive you are to the how you feel when you do it.
Okay.
Make sense?
Yeah.
Yeah, and your ammonia is high. That's going to get brain fog. Yeah, it's affecting everything, and it just creates this foggy brain. It's a metabolite that shouldn't be elevated like that. And I'm seeing that it's likely that you have a CBS SNP in your genetics, and oftentimes that's indicated by the high ammonia because it can't, you can't break things through. Did you test homocysteine, by the way? I'd love to see what your homocysteine is.
Not that I'm aware of.
Yeah, that's a good one to test for. So some of the amino acids, the only one that's high, this isn't really a good test of, like, a lot of these are zero, which doesn't necessarily mean that you're deficient in them, but it could be a good indication. We mostly look for high levels for it, pathways that are blocked. So the hydroxyisovaleric, I'd have to look that on their chart and remember what that is, and the phenyl, so it's 62 and 72. We'll look those up in a minute to see what those are related to. Your phosphorus is pretty low. I mean, it's not lower than the actual range, but it's kind of low, which would affect bone metabolism, your creatinine. Okay, so let's just go. I wanted to just show real quick this. See this pathway? Okay, that's your phenylalanine tyrosine pathway. And they mark it on there where you're high here, which means that your flora is messed up and it's not allowing, it's making it be too high. Tyrosine and the Clostridia might be related to this, or this might be related to the Clostridia. So they mark the ones that you have problem with on here. All right, let me look at the
test, and I've read it to the best of my ability.
Yeah, you have to do them over and over again. I still have to read certain things. So what was 62 and 72? The more I do them, the more I can go through them easily. But there's still stuff. It's like, and especially because you don't necessarily see all the things whenever they're done. So the ones that really stick are the ones that you, there we go. Pantothenic acid. Okay, so what was the ones that were, it was a glutaric acid. So it was 53. Riboflavin again. Fatty acid oxidation defect. So you're eating a lot of fat, but you're probably not got the right mechanisms in place to keep it from oxidizing.
What would be one method to get it to oxidize better?
Antioxidants, really being careful about the fats that you eat, like only eating cold pressed, don't eat fats in a restaurant because they're usually crap.
Right.
Yeah, so it's the antioxidants, and I think that there's definitely a blockage in your antioxidants. Your glutathione up there was problem. So it's finding out what's going on there. You see, you have no C. Right. So you can start with that. You can start with, does this mark, this doesn't go through the fatty acids, does it? No, it doesn't. It doesn't. Yeah. So, you know, glutathione's great, but without seeing your genes, I want to make sure that you're not going to have a backup because you already have all the brain fog and you don't want more. Again, riboflavin and CoQ10 keep coming up over and over again. So those are two things that I would up your CoQ10 and get yourself on some riboflavin. Riboflavin 5-phosphate. I know that I think Thorn has one that's a B-complex, B2 complex. So it has riboflavin, high levels of riboflavin, and then it has the rest of them. So you don't get out of balance with the rest. And it's all in the activated form. So that would be a good one. The other one that was high was 63. Let me see. Oops. Okay, where'd we go? Okay, here we go. It's related to ammonia again. Let's see. It doesn't specifically point it out, but just 62 to 74, absence of genetic disorders if they're high, but yours, if they're low, but yours was high, but they're not saying what that particular one is. So we'd have to look that one up, look up the, was it 63? Yeah, look that one, like just do a Google search on that particular chemical, that particular amino acid derivative, and just find out more about it. I don't know off the top of my head, no. That's typically how you learn this stuff, is you just keep looking the stuff up that you don't know, and then eventually you know it. Right? So let me see what else is here before. And Lynn, remind, if there's anybody else that's having questions, let me know, and we can come back to Stan in a bit. So you've got a bunch of toxics. So this is a toxicology profile. I'm having a hard time reading what the number is there. So yours was up there in the 70, almost the 95th percentile. So you've got, have you had exposure? Did you have exposure to like Agent Orange or anything like that when you were over? Yeah.
Oil fires, radiated rounds from tanks and so forth.
Right.
I also grew up in North Bergen, Jersey, which at one time North Bergen was right next to the train tracks, was textile city.
Mm-hmm.
You go 3 feet under the ground of my house, and there's paint cans and all sorts of textiles. So I grew up right above the poison.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, so you've got. Have you tested it? Yeah.
That's the whole thing. So I have to, that's one of my.
Yeah.
I bought a bird. I just literally ordered it this morning.
Okay. Well, that, does that take out the chemicals?
For the most part, my understanding is yes, but like anything, I can't be sure. That's why I want to have it retested.
Yeah, I would test water. If you're on wells, I would test water once a year just to make sure, because you never know.
Yeah.
You never know. Okay, so. The main ones, it's hard to read these because of this, it's fuzzy.
I can read them.
The acetylphenylcysteine, benzene. So most of these look like they're low, but I can't tell because the line is all fuzzed out. But it looks like it's right down to 0.38 in the range of, so that one looks okay. Here's another one where you're in the perchlorate. Rocket fuels, missiles, fireworks. I'm sure you were exposed to some of that stuff.
Oh, yeah. And just so you know, Gulf War Syndrome is one of the listed possibilities for this when I was doing research on land.
Right. You know, there's one thing that helps to pull. It pulls heavy metals out, but it also pulls toxins out. It's very gentle because chelation and all kinds of things like that are just so rough on the body and can actually, if you've got detox pathway problems, it can actually make you worse. But modified citrus pectin is a powder called Pectisolve. And there's a doctor named Elias. He has a lot of stuff on his site that talk about the chemical and the metal detox programs. So you might want to look at that. Modified citrus pectin. Citrus pectin, like oranges, citrus pectin. It's Pectisolve is the name of the product that I'm thinking about.
Okay.
Beautiful. Acrylamide, you've got a lot of stuff going on here. Organophosphates, so you're exposed to a lot of stuff. This is a relatively new test, so I haven't seen very many of them, so I don't know how many people, a Vietnam War, look at this. Oh, it's part of Agent Orange. Pyrethrines are okay. Yeah, so clearly there's a lot of work to do for this. And does the naturopath that you're seeing have a good sense of how to detox you from this? Has he talked about that at all?
He wants me to first do parasite because he says it appears to him that I likely have them. So I said, fine. Then he wants to do heavy metals. He doesn't want to do everything at once. But before he wants to get the gene test before he really gives me
right.
The whole layout of the.
Yeah. So you might consider because it can go either way. Because a lot of times with the candida, if you don't address the metals, you can't get rid of it. If you don't address the parasites, you can't get rid of the candida. You clearly have some fungal things going. You have some bacterial things going. So you have to move slowly. And the reason for looking at your tests would be to understand how strong or weak your detox pathways are. Because you've got to go super slow with somebody who has a lot of those pathways. But that's why I like the modified citrus pectin, because you can do it alongside of whatever else you're doing to do, because it just sucks out a lot of the stuff. And zeolite's the same thing. It'll just suck out a lot of the toxins as you're releasing them from storage through whatever means you choose to go by. Is your adrenal test in here too? This is just all the.
It is. It's a little further back after the yolk test.
And this, yeah, there, okay, yes, yeah, so your cholesterol's, yeah, it's okay, triglycerides are high, HDL's low, so you definitely have an insulin resistance problem, because that 123 to 54 is over 2, and you really want that triglyceride HDL ratio to be 1 or less, so, those don't look too bad. Liver, yeah, your liver's a little stressed. The labs will say that those numbers are normal, but I like to see those 20, 10 to 25. Your TSH looks good. Your hemoglobin A1C, actually your hemoglobin A1C looks 4.9. Holy cow. That's actually good. Surprisingly, if you've got that high insulin level, so you're just hyperinsulinemic, not insulin resistant yet, okay? But you're just producing too much insulin, and that's causing damage. Because I would rarely see, if I see somebody with a 48 as a postprandial insulin, that I would not expect to see a 4.9. I would have expected you to see at least a 5.8 on your hemoglobin A1C. 4.9 is excellent. That means that your average blood glucose is maintaining at probably about a 98 or 92 or something like that. So that includes postprandial and fasting, which is actually quite good. So there's a surprise. It's always interesting when you have a surprise. All right. So you're decent in the morning, high end of normal, but that could be just fine. But then at noon, you're starting to go up, and then you go crazy in the afternoon. Sometimes those kind of things happen from a blood sugar dip, like if you have a high glycemic lunch. So if you're eating out at lunch and you're having, a sandwich or a veggie burger or something like that, you can be causing – you are hyperinsulinemic. That's going to cause a really high output of insulin, which could cause your blood sugar to go down, which then causes emergency, and your body produces adrenaline and cortisol to try to get it back up. So that's a couple of possibilities. But the fact that it stays up into midnight, it's more less likely that, but it just depends on what you're eating. So if you're going to really step down those carbs and up, go into more of a ketogenic state, I think that could help that a lot. But, yeah, I would probably go with the phosphatidylserine to pull that down. I mean, address the lunch piece. Make sure that you're not eating anything that would cause it to go up. Make sure your lunch is just a moderate, very low-carb, moderate protein, high-fat diet lunch.
How do you spell that
phosphatidylserine? P-H-O-S-P-H-A-T-I-D-Y-L. Serine, S-E-R-I-N-E. It's an amino acid complex with phospholipid. And all the phospholipids are amazing for your brain, your nervous system. I would say even looking at a lecithin source, I like sunflower lecithin because it's unlikely to be contaminated as soy would be. But sunflower lecithin can be very helpful. Your androgen pathways. So given that you're sucking everything down towards cortisol, I would expect these to be low. Your progesterone looks good. Your DHEA, what did they say here? Did they show? Okay, so this is the fasting insulin, non-fasting insulin. So it's huge difference. Huge. Yeah. Yeah, hyperinsulinemia. Salivary IgA is decent. Gluten and antibodies. Have you been avoiding gluten?
Yeah.
100%? Not for the most part. I don't want to hear "for the most part," Stan. Okay. All right. So 100%. Commit to me today. Commit to me today. I'm going to put you on the spot in front of all these people. I'm committed. No more gluten. Done. It's not worth the risk. Okay. It's not worth it. It's not worth it. Yeah, so your testosterone's low. It's, you know, it's being sucked away. Your vitamin, oops. Ooh, it's going to shut me down here. Your vitamin B12 is an issue, and we'll see what shows up on your genetics, but you definitely need vitamin, folate and vitamin B12 because of this. Even though your MMA was high, you've got functional abnormalities in your red blood cell sizes. I can't, it's going to go away. So the window's going to go away. It just like crashed. But anyway, oops, let's see. Video. There we go. So I can't see it anymore. Was there anything else past that in the test? Because I think we have to move on to another person, but I think we got through most of it. Super low. Yeah. I wouldn't be surprised, right? Because if you look at just look at the steroid pathways, right? You look at where it comes from. You've got pregnenolone, cholesterol down to pregnenolone, and pregnenolone can go to progesterone. It can go down to DHEA and testosterone. And if you're sucking it all down to cortisol, which is like trying to keep you alive, right? It's your body just trying to keep you alive. So you're sucking it down to cortisol. You're not going to have enough left over, and testosterone suffers. Okay, so addressing this other with the phosphatidylserine and heart maths or tapping or meditation or something that you've got to do because you are a hypervigilant person. My guess is that you also have some of these genes. You probably have some GADs and MAOs and various other SNPs that predispose you to being more hypervigilant. And then you put somebody like that with that genetics in these stressful situations and all hell breaks loose, basically, right? So that's the stuff I would be looking at. That's going to raise your testosterone. But if your doc's open to prescribing some bioidentical testosterone to get you through this hump, it's going to make you feel a lot better. It's going to help your brain. Don't do testosterone. I mean, it's better in a male. Here's the thing. You can't control it. You can't, like, if you're taking it liquid, if you're taking a topical, you can control it. You go, whoa, that was too much. But once they shoot that pellet in, you're done for 6 months. I am totally against pellets. And you got to make that decision yourself. Yeah, sure, it's easier. You don't have to deal with it every day. But I've seen nightmares. And most of the nightmares, granted, are in women that I've seen with pellets.
That's what I read as well. There are anything, always the possibility of your body not liking it.
Right, but it's dosage. This is my concern with it. So it's going to give you a dose, right? And dosing is an art, not a science, so to speak. It's both. It's an art and a science. So you dose somebody, you're not going to get the dose right on the first shot. And this is where Western medicine, I think, falls short of really understanding how to really manipulate chemistry. I could say to you, well, the typical dose of this particular nutrient is this. And you take that and you feel like crap on it. Or it doesn't touch the surface and we have to raise it or lower it. But if I were to shoot that in you in a pellet form, I can't change the dose for 6 months.
True.
That's my concern with that, okay? So just have a discussion with them about what are my other options.
And I will do that. And I guess this is not the first time I've had a testosterone coming low.
Yeah.
And
getting it up is going to help you. Well, that wasn't the right choice of words, but getting your testosterone levels increased is basically going to help you with your brain function as well, your motivation, your brain function, your gut function. All of those things are linked. But I don't want to see you go to the too much side. Or that they just shoot it in you and say, hey, here, Stan, you're good, and it wasn't enough.
This treatment is not covered by insurance, so it's all out of my pocket. So I'll be a little bit more careful.
Yeah.
I'm not going to spend $800 to tell it.
Exactly. And look up, there's a guy, it's a Warzynski Lynn remember his name that we interviewed, who's so great about bioidenticals. And he doesn't just work with women. He works with men, too. And he's so careful about using – he uses oil-based, and he uses the titrating the dose, and he has each person figure out their own dose. He helps them to titrate it. You start with this. Okay, you use this much. How did you feel? Okay, let's move it up. Oh, you got your right dose. Good. So you get the minimum effective dose without having the excessive. And because when you take hormones, there's a negative feedback loop for every single hormone. So you're feeding back to the brain, hey, good to go. You don't have to make any. You don't have to make any. Do something else. Do something else with that pregnenolone. Why don't you make me more cortisol? Keep me awake longer. You know what I'm saying? So it's a negative feedback loop. Same thing with DHEA. A lot of doctors are putting people on 25 to 50 milligrams of DHEA. That basically gives them signal as like, oh, there's plenty. We don't have to make any. Whereas if you just supply the little extra to bring you up to where you need to be or just before where you need to be, the body's still working on it. And then you support the body mechanisms to be able to make it. That's, you know, it's all my opinion. Everybody has their own opinion in medicine, right? And
my thing is stay as close to nature.
Exactly. And shooting a pellet of testosterone into you is not nature. Right? There's a rhythm. The body produces it more here and less there. You know, it responds to life. And when you have a supplement of it in an oil-based form or cream-based form or some form where you can actually on your own, like, oh, I'm under a much more stress this week. Maybe I need more. Oh, I'm really mellow. I'm laying on the beach in Hawaii now. I don't need as much. My body's just like doing its thing. And you can adjust it yourself and you learn to be your own doctor. Okay? Good. Well, thank you for sharing your case with us. It's cool to be able to go through that and just keep us posted. Okay? Okay, you're welcome. Bye. All right. So, cell phone Toronto. Bye-bye. Oops, it's open. I'm going to open up cell phone Toronto. Who's that? Hi.
It's Daniela. Daniela.
Hi, Daniela.
Hoffman. Hi. I'm calling from a hospital. My grandson was born this morning, my third grandson.
Congratulations. So.
Yeah.
How wonderful.
Yeah.
Congratulations. That's awesome.
Yeah. So I missed most of your presentation here. And I have nothing really to write, but I wanted to bring up a case of a friend of mine.
Sure.
I had her fill out the forms, you know, the scores for digestion.
Yep.
And what comes up the highest is candida and other organisms overgrowth, quite high, and a good possibility of leaky gut.
Yeah.
And she had a stroke in August, and she's 63 years old. She was not quite 63 when it happened. And they told her to be completely off all supplements, so she's not doing anything at all. And she's taking blood thinners, of course. And she has recovered most of her functions. It was on the right side.
Yeah.
She still has a little bit of, I think, balancing. I mean, she's walking, but she has her vision is affected. She's not allowed to drive yet. And she's still tired and she's not taking any support at all. And I know she had a bit of a heart condition already before for many years. I just wondered what your take is on this. I know it's a little political with when doctors say one thing, you know.
It's always hard because to see the ignorance, right? They don't know. Since they don't know anything about how they affect the body, they just say stay off of all of it, right? So, like, clearly, like, wouldn't she benefit from fish oils? Because they're ever on blood
pressure. Yeah, it's food, right?
Right, it's food-based. But you can't recommend that to somebody who's on
blood thinner.
Because my take is always, okay, somebody's on blood thinners, let me recommend natural things that keep the blood thin. And then they can back off of their blood thinners, but that's not the
exactly.
way it works.
Yeah,
they go
yeah.
to fear, right? So there's a lot, your hands are kind of tied in that area. You could educate her, right? You could educate her about this benefit and then ask the doctor, like, look, if I start to take this fish oil, look, there's, and you can find tons of Medline articles, you know, medical articles that talk about the benefits of things like fish oils and vitamin C and all for stroke and for coagulation problems and heart disease, et cetera. So it's really a lot of times when you're dealing with the medicine, you've got to talk their language. They don't read their journals. Quite frankly, they don't read them. They don't have time to read their journals, right?
That's right.
All of this is their journals. So if you can find not an article on, you know, some popular mind body green site or whatever, you don't want it back to them. You want to give them the science. And you can compile some things for her that show the benefit of certain nutrients, natokinase, CoQ10, all these different things that are supportive to help prevent an additional accident, right? You can look at some of the medical doctors out there who are putting people on specific diets. I mean, and some of them are real extreme, like Esselstyn and Ornish, and there's another one, Caldwell Esselstyn is a cardiologist. Joel Kahn, he's a cardiologist. So I talk to him about what he does for people. He doesn't, you know, this is guy in, you know, I think he's in Austin now, and he basically, he's a cardiologist, and he says to people, look, I can cut you open and, you know, kind of do some plumbing changes on your chest, or I could put you on a plant-based diet. Like, which do you want? There's tons of research on it and evidence. So getting off all supplements, not a good idea. So you can work with her on her diet, right? Most people are on the standard American diet or a modified, quote unquote, supposedly healthy version of the standard American diet, which is.
She's better, but she's still eating some gluten and, some dairy, and I said you got to be off of those completely.
And sugars, that's the thing that's really
sugar,
people
yes,
are
yeah.
not seeing that impact
yeah.
of insulin
yeah.
resistance on cardiac function.
Exactly.
Right?
Yeah,
thrombosis
exactly
and
her,
all.
Yeah.
So really, like an insulin resistance type diet for people who have heart disease is the only way to go. You've got to do that because otherwise they're just predisposed, right? I wish my parents would have done this. I know their heart disease was related to insulin resistance. I know it.
Right. Yeah.
Right. So yeah, she's got a wake up call. And that's the way I always like to phrase it with people when they're like, I'm only 63. Why did this happen to me? Look, it was a wake up call from nature saying, come on, we're not going to kill you now, but wake up. Here's your warning. Right. My parents didn't get those warnings. They just lost it. Right. And so anytime we get those wake up calls, we say, okay, what can we do? And you really have to work with her on food. You can't go against the doctors, but you can educate her so that she can then show stuff to her doctor.
Right. And because I like she has some digestive problems and very high likelihood of candida and what else is there. What can be safely given to her when they're saying no supplements, you know, in terms of
food. There's lots of good food.
You can do garlic
right?
and
yeah, garlic and there's you know pau d'arco tea and there's berberine, which is an herb. That's not a supplement, right? That's an herb. Oregano. Oregano is from. It's a plant. It's a food.
Right.
Right. There's all sorts of food-based things. So you might want to look up food-only approaches. And it's really a matter of getting all the sugar out, getting the whole processed food out. So there's a lot you can do to restore gut function without having to add supplements. You just start with all the basics, the basic gut hygiene, chewing, relaxing before she eats, making sure she has the right enzymes by, you know, eating more juice, drinking juices and fermented foods and plant-based foods, raw foods that are going to be high in that. Right. There's no reason she can't make some coconut yogurt. And they make qualm about that because coconut saturated fat. So you might say she might make some sunflower seed yogurt, or, you know, something like that.
Coconut kefir.
Kefir.
I can help her with that. That's great.
Yeah.
That's wonderful.
Okay.
All right. Thank you very, very much. I'm going to get off because we're going to go back to see the baby.
All right. You're welcome. Okay. Enjoy the baby.
Bye-bye.
Bye. Okay. Good. All right, so who else? Let's see. If you have questions, I'm looking on Instant Teleseminar. So I see some of you have come on to Zoom. So I'm going to look to see who's there and if you have any questions there. I don't see any hands up. Okay. And on Zoom, you can actually unmute yourself. So if I don't see you and you want to ask a question, you can just cover over your name and you can just say unmute and that'll unmute you. So I don't see anything there. Let me go over here. I'm just curious, was that helpful having seeing scans lab. Okay, let's see. Okay, so Rosemary, it sounds like you need to set up a time with Lynn, and Lynn will go through an orientation, and there's orientation calls once a month. That's for any PT. So yeah, Lynn is really great at getting people into the program, and people reach out to her for help. All right. Yes. So Lynn set up a, we'll set up a time with that. So for her, and welcome. I'm glad you're going to be starting now. And so some people in this program, like, Stan and, Daniela are in clinical mastery of the digestive tract. Some of you are in insulin resistance and some of you are in NEPT, which includes all of that. So there's just, it's nice. I like to have this community feel, which is why we keep the Facebook group open to all rather than having individual calls. So you get to meet other people in other programs and just really expand your knowledge. Because if you're working in holistic health, alternative health, whether you're a medical doctor, a health coach, a personal trainer, wherever it is that you're pulling this together, it always helps to be in community because you're, maybe your basic training that got you where you are didn't necessarily have all of the components and the widespread things and the widespread exposures. So that's why we like to get everybody together. All right. I don't see any more there. Let me go to conference. Anybody else have questions? Raise your hand. No? All right. Looks like we're good. No more questions? Lynn, are there any other questions anywhere else that I'm missing?
To do, you know, some people were wondering if it was a blood test, a urine test,
a saliva test. Oh, yeah, I can explain that. So what he did was it was a combination of urine and saliva. So the organic acids is a urine test, and I get that I'm not sure about those the tox ones. We could go back and look at it and see what it was. I have to open it up again because it closed down on me. But Stan might be able to open up your line, Stan, or open up Stan's line so he can let us know. Where is he?
Well, on the top of it did say blood.
Okay, so probably the tox part is blood. Oh, his line's open. Yeah, I know for sure the organic acid part, that first part we went through, was blood. I'm not sure if the other part is urine. So the organic acid is 24-hour urine collection, so which is a great test because we don't have to have them go to a lab to get their blood drawn. It's really accessible, very accessible test. But the other parts, I think, are blood. So, Stan, what do you think?
The organic acid was definitely urine.
Yep.
Blood, of course, was blood, and saliva was four times throughout the day. 23andMe is a one-shot.
Right, spit, yeah. But the ones, the tox that you did with the organic acids, the stuff you sent to Great Plains was all urine then?
Yes, that is urine.
Okay, good. So all the tox screens are all urine, so that's good to know too. So you can actually find out the people's levels of glyphosate, and these are new tests that Great Plains started very recently. This is my first time seeing them, so. I think it's something I want to get into. I like all this. And now I have your thing. I can read all the little explanations of the various pieces and learn more and more about it. The cool part about that organic acids test is it gives you a description of every single one of those pieces. Like I was going off my memory and you noticed there were a couple of them I didn't remember. So I had to look up, but most of them I was going off my memory, but it gives you to learn. It just gives you this description and you can study that stuff and study it and study it and study it because there's so much there. Really is so much there. So, yeah, and the saliva is just, that was the diagnostics version. You could do it through BioHealth. You spit, and it comes out with four times, and it gives you your rhythm.
And then on one part of the test, it looked like both the riboflavin and CoQ10 were both high, but you were saying...
Oh, these are okay, so yeah, let me explain how organic acids work. Most of the stuff that's tested in organic acids, if it's high, it means that that substrate is low because it's testing, it's not testing like riboflavin in the blood. It's testing the things that riboflavin is involved with metabolically. So I'm just going to say riboflavin is responsible for the conversion of protein, amino acid A to amino acid B. If I see that amino acid B is high, it's suggestive that riboflavin is low because there wasn't enough riboflavin to do the conversion. So that's why you can pull up a Krebs cycle chart and you can look at all the spots where he had high numbers and see what was right before that. What's the step right before that? It could be that there's one linchpin place. Like if it's further along, that's high, that's high, that's high, and everything's high. It could be that all of these things are impaired, but it also could be what's the linchpin, what's the thing right at the start. So it takes a while to get used to it. In NEPT, we have a whole module with tons and tons and tons and tons of cases on organic acids. So you just keep doing it and doing it. On our case study calls and on our open coaching calls, we go through them a lot because people will bring those in. So you learn and learn and learn. Another test that includes the organic acids is from Genova, and they have a test called NutraEval. And NutraEval combines blood and urine, I believe, as well. And it looks at the organic acids very similar to this. There's a few things that it looks at that this doesn't and vice versa. But then it also looks at particular levels of some of the nutrients. So it'll look at red blood cell magnesium, right? It'll look at some of them in the white blood cells, some of them in the serum, depending on what the research shows is the most reliable way to test for specific nutrients. Because a lot of people think, I'm going to just go to my doctor and tell my doctor to run lab level, serum blood test levels of these certain nutrients. But those don't mean anything. Because it's just what's in the blood. It's not saying what's metabolically active in the tissue. So a test like the NutriVal, a test like the organic acids test is giving you functional. I'm so into functional because I'm going to give you an example that's one of my pet peeves lately is that the doctors have stopped running iron, serum iron. Instead, they run ferritin. Which is a good thing to run because ferritin is the stored form of iron. And if somebody's low in their stored form, then we know that they're heading towards anemia. So if you have a borderline low ferritin, or you have a normal ferritin and a borderline low ferritin, you can still have a normal iron. And that's just means that we're draining the resources. But we start to see weird stuff, like we'll see super high iron and low ferritin. That doesn't make sense. Why would the body not be taking the extra iron and putting it into ferritin? Well, that's a good question. Let's find out. There's a number of things. It could be a liver problem. It could be a problem with melatonin because melatonin is required to convert the iron to the form that then gets stored as ferritin. So if we skip and we just go, let's just test the blood level of this thing, we're missing this amazing information that we can get. So that's one of my pet peeves because I see a lot of people with super high ferritin and low iron. You go, well, why did the body do that? Why didn't the body take the extra stored iron as ferritin and put it into the blood so then you can make hemoglobin and give this person energy? The other thing we see a lot that everybody overlooks, except functional doctors, is we might see a high iron level in the blood, but low hemoglobin. Well, that could be related to B12 deficiency. You certainly have to let go of that. But most of the time, it's because the mechanism for taking the iron and forming it into hemoglobin is busted. Why? Well, vitamin B6 is a cofactor for it. So sometimes all it takes is a little B6 to solve that problem. So the more and more you delve into this, and I know some of you are not in the full program, so you're not getting all this stuff, but it's just really important to see that we're looking at function. Organic acid, it didn't look at his stool to see if he had candida growing there, if fungus is growing there, or bacteria. What it was looking at was metabolic byproducts that those organisms would release into the system. They get into the blood, then they get into the urine because the kidney filters them out. So when we see those, we say, oh, he's probably got a fungal infection, a bacterial infection, and Clostridia overgrowth. We don't know that for sure because we didn't culture it. You could follow it up with a stool test and see that. And you could see that the maybe there was Candida tropicalis overgrowth or, you know, bacillus or Helicobacter or something like that. But we would see that actually there. But this is a test that gives us a whole lot of other information without the extra expense and inconvenience of a stool test. Not to say that a stool test isn't warranted in a lot of situations. I think one of the bonuses we gave for CMDS, I think it was during early, was one of the early sign-up bonuses that we gave, was a couple of lectures that I did on organic acids and stool testing. So, yes. Direct labs? Oh, really? It's not on direct labs? You have to hook up with somebody. Have we don't have an arrangement with Genova, do we? They
Well, we have something with Genova, just not this particular one. Maybe direct labs does have it.
I thought direct labs did have it.
It was just more expensive than the actual.
Well, it's their carrying charges. So yeah, you can get it through direct labs. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, we have it on our site, so people in our programs can, well, we don't have it yet. We should add it, but we have others. Yeah. We have others. We have others of the Genova. And if people are in my programs, then I'll let them run it through me. But we had to make that a private page because we were having people just Googling and finding us and ordering lab tests through us. And I didn't know these people. They weren't in a, and that I could get in huge trouble if I run a lab test on somebody I don't even know them. So we had to put it behind the scenes in the thing. And you all have access to that as long as you're in one of the programs. So you can order it that way. But we don't have a setup where you can just, like, if you're ordering a lot for patients, then that's going to blow our, we don't have the ability to do that. We don't have the team in place to do that. It's more for you. But, you know, if you're doing them during while you're studying, and or if you're just doing them like once a month or something, it's not a big deal. It's just if there's somebody who has a really busy practice and starts running these every couple of, you know, couple of times a week, we just don't have the team to handle that, and we don't charge extra for it. I mean, we charge carrying charge, but we actually lose money on those tests because of the time it takes my team member that handles it to actually call, because they have to actually phone in or fax in each individual thing. It's, they won't automate it. So direct labs is probably your best bet.
And then one last question, because we have another call.
That's right.
Adrian is saying, I'm wondering how you would do heavy metal detox. You said to make sure detox pathways are working. Makes sense. I'm doing H. pylori and yeast right now. Finished off doing parasites. Still doing coffee enemas and daily sauna.
Great.
But I know I have high heavy metals. Have yet to 23andMe and blood markers. Would you also recommend doing yield? And what markers show the body is strong enough, and what do you use in the protocol?
Well, that's a lot of questions. So you're already doing a lot of it, right? You're doing coffee enemas. You're doing saunas. That's all part of a detox. I mentioned to Stan a real gentle detox that really works well for most people. I haven't seen anybody have negative side effects because it went too fast, was the modified citrus pectin, the Pectisolve. I've used zeolites, you know, because they suck things out. But, you know, you're doing a lot of it already. As far as how do you know, a lot of times you don't know. You can look at this test, the OAT test, to see how those pathways are doing. And you can look at the genetics to see do you have some of those pathways which are tending to be sluggish because of the way that they're coded genetically. And then you go really slow. But I would say, I would always go really slow with people because you just never know, especially if you do the test. If you do the testing and you look and you go, oh, well, they look like they have really robust open pathways, then you can move more aggressively. But just going really slowly and adding in something like the modified citrus pectin to pull things out, and if you know you have heavy metals, then you want to be looking at what's the source like you want to make sure you're not still exposed. One of the things that showed up for me once I did heavy metals was arsenic. I'm like, how do I have arsenic? Where am I getting arsenic? Well, it turned out that the stain that they use on a lot of outdoor decks has arsenic in it. And I walk barefoot all the time. I don't wear shoes. So I was walking barefoot on my stained deck. So there's all kinds of little things like that. So once you get tested and you see what somebody's levels are, you want to go back and say, okay, where did this come from? If it made sense that, oh, wow, they were a pottery person in college and they handled a lot of this lead-containing pottery or stains, then, okay, maybe that's it. As long as they're not doing that anymore, you just yank it out. But for some people, you put them on these chelation-type protocols and detox protocols, and they still have high levels of these metals. You know, okay, where is it? Is it copper in the pipes? Is it, you know, mercury in the teeth? Is it lead in some of the animal products you could be eating? If you're doing a lot of bone broths and things like that, the bones have actually stored lead. So there's a lot of places for it. So those are all the pieces you want to do.
And the other thing I would mention too is if you go to the digestion module, there's a really nice gentle liver cleanse in there.
Yep.
Yep.
Yep. And I'm not a big fan of doing like the really heavy duty liver cleanses unless you're being guided. Like one of our NEPT students, Jane, is going to be doing one. And I highly recommend when I send out a notice about that you do it with her. I did it and I loved it. But she guides you through. She has three coaches that are going to be like making sure everybody's okay. You don't just go do and drink a thing of olive oil and do all the stuff to try to release stones unless you're being guided, in my opinion. So we created a really gentle little liver protocol that's 3 to 5 days that you could start people on.
And is modified citrus more gentle than real life?
I find that it is. I've had people have they've over detoxed because the zeolite can tend to draw things out of the tissues too quickly, whereas the modified citrus pectin tends to just draw it out of the gut, and then that almost creates a gradient, so that slowly draws it out. That's just the mechanism that was explained to me, but it's what I've seen is it is more gentle. Things like DMSA are super, super aggressive, super aggressive, and they'll yank out all your regular minerals, your zinc, et cetera, and I've had people go through those, you know, with a practitioner, and that they've had really bad reactions. We're good? All right. Well, it's time for our next call. So thank you, everybody, for being here. And thanks for sharing your story. And we'll talk to all you later. Bye-bye. Bye.